Cinnamon, where you gonna run to? Cinnamon, where you gonna run to? Where you gonna run to? All on that day.
Hello and welcome to The Breakdown, brought to you by The Nation Magazine and TheNation.com. I'm Chris Hayes, Washington editor of The Nation. Each week here on The Breakdown, we take your questions via Twitter at Chris L. Hayes or via email at TheBreakdown@TheNation.com. The way it works is this. You send us questions about what's perplexing you this week in Washington, and we try to break it down.
Will I run to the rock? Please hide me, I run to the rock. Please hide me, I run to the rock. Please hide me, Lord.
All right, so here we are, week three of The Breakdown, episode three in a collector series. This week we're trying something new. I actually have a guest for the first time on The Breakdown with me, one of the best reporters in this town, a man by the name of Ryan Grimm, who reports on Congress for a website, a really great little operation you should check out called The Huffington Post. Ryan, why don't you say hi?
How you guys doing?
We're doing this 1960s doo-wop style where we are sharing a microphone, so apologies for sound quality. So this week, I got a bunch of questions from folks over Twitter, which essentially amounted to the same thing. In the wake of Scott Brown's victory in the Massachusetts Senate, the Democrats now have 59 as opposed to 60 votes. They can't break a filibuster by themselves. What are the legislative procedural options for Democrats to pass healthcare reform? So we're going to step through, there's about four different routes they can go. We're going to step through each of them with Ryan here. So the first one is basically for the House to just pass the Senate bill. Am I right?
Right. So that's the simplest one legislatively in terms of procedure. You just take exactly what the Senate passed. You don't change a single comma. You get the Cornhusker kickback and everything that went along with it. You get 218 votes and you kick it to the president. And it's done. Now that requires getting the votes.
Right. And that seems to be the obstacle right now. The reporting today seems to indicate, or at least Nancy Pelosi is saying, that she does not, this is as of Thursday afternoon, things could change by the time you hear this, she does not have those votes.
Right. The House just doesn't like the Senate bill, and almost as importantly, it doesn't like the Senate. The House has an extreme disdain for the way that the Senate tells it what it has to do time after time. And in this case, they're telling it what it has to do down to the letter. And that's something that just gives them like an institutional revulsion. But at the same time, they hate the union provisions in there and a variety of other kind of reactionary elements that are in the bill. Plus, they don't really like the abortion language. So the STUPAC people, your pro-lifers, are going to have a tough time getting on board as well.
Right. So there seems like there's some mutually exclusive constituency. So one thing is if Nancy Pelosi can find 218 votes, they pass the identical bill through the House. If not that, what's the next option?
Right. And don't put it past Nancy Pelosi to be able to pull that off. She's quite an underrated political operative. So if she really set her mind to it, it's possible that she could do that. If she can't, you have to fall back into what's sort of called a patchwork approach, where you would pass the Senate version, but simultaneously pass a patch on it that says that this bill that we just passed is amended in these following ways, and those following ways would reflect the deal that the White House, the Senate, and the House reached before the world ended on Tuesday.
Let me just make sure that folks are following along. So right now we have two bills. We have a House bill and a Senate bill. They've both passed their respective houses, and they're actually 80% similar, but 20% important differences, right? So what you're saying is if you can't get the House to just pass the Senate bill, what you can do is a two-step process. The first is that the House passes the Senate bill, but they pass it contingent on a guarantee that the changes to the legislation that have been hammered out in the early meetings between House and Senate leaders are pushed through the Senate. The immediate question is, well, wait a second, if they only have 59 votes in the Senate, how will they ever be able to get those patches through?
The changes are fairly modest, and so they could use the process that's known as budget reconciliation, which means that you only need 50 votes plus a tie-breaking vote from the vice president. Now, at the same time, you have people on the left saying, well, look, if you're going to use reconciliation, let's put the public option back on the table because we have 51 votes for the public option. But if they do this small patchwork approach, from leadership's perspective, they want to make it fairly simple, just implement the changes that were made in the compromise, get that through, and get it to the House, because the House needs more than Harry Reid's word that he's going to try to get something through the Senate. At this point, the House is probably going to want to see the actual bill passed through the Senate and put next to the House bill so they could pass both the patch and the original one at the same time.
Okay, so this is an important point, right? So what this means is that the Senate has to act first under this approach. The Senate would have to get through reconciliation, pass the patchwork, the little amendments essentially that have been made in the conference committee negotiations, pass that and say, we have this bill that amends a bill that doesn't exist yet, right?
Right.
Or that amends our Senate bill that we passed. Then the House would say, okay, now that you've done that, we're going to take two votes. Our first vote is going to be passing verbatim the Senate bill, and then we're going to pass verbatim the reconciliation patch. Those things will come together. The president will sign both of them, and we'll have the legislation. Is that correct?
Right. Reconciliation is a tricky parliamentary process to try to work your way through. There's something called the Byrd Rule, which comes from Bob Byrd, which says that you can only pass something through reconciliation if it has a direct substantial impact on the budget. Now, it's never really been litigated what it actually means. It all comes down to the parliamentarian's interpretation. If the parliamentarian rules that something is invalidated by the Byrd Rule, then Democrats can override that with 60 votes. But they don't have 60 votes, so it's tossed out. So some of the compromises that they've made would probably be thrown out by the Byrd Rule, but the majority of them would be able to slip through.
Well, let's take one example. So this is the reason that people have been saying that reconciliation is a great way to go. Even people like Bernie Sanders have been hesitant to use it precisely for this reason, that you're subject to the whim of the parliamentarian and what is directly relevant to the budget. So one example is the House version of the bill has a national exchange, not federally run exchange, and the Senate version has state-run exchanges. So what do we know about whether the change to making state exchanges into national exchanges would pass the Byrd Rule muster?
Well, most of this stuff has been scored by the Congressional Budget Office. And so the irony here is that the more expensive a program is or the more money that it saves, then the more likely it is to escape the knife of the Byrd Rule. In other words,
the more likely it is to get into the legislation.
Get into the legislation, because then you can argue that it obviously has a substantial impact on the budget, because look, the CBO says that it has a substantial impact on the budget. Now, national state exchanges, I can't recall. Now, I think a national exchange saves money. So in the sense that it saves money for off the federal budget, then it would have a substantial impact, and then it should be fine. Some things that didn't make it in would obviously be acceptable under the Byrd Rule, such as a bigger expansion of Medicaid or an expansion of Medicare. So the left might be able to push for some of those things to be included in lieu of a public option.
Okay, so those are the options ahead of us. Of course, the fourth option, which we won't discuss in much detail, is letting the whole thing die and, you know, destroying what's left of the credibility of the Democratic Party. But we're going to remain optimistic here. You should definitely check out Ryan Grimm's work. It's some of the best reporting that happens out of Washington, D.C., and it's available at thehuffingtonpost.com. So that is it for week 3 of The Breakdown. The Breakdown is a weekly production of The Nation Magazine and thenation.com. New audio casts are posted each Friday at thenation.com and available in iTunes. The Breakdown was produced by Lauren North and yours truly. Senior producers of The Nation are Emily Douglas and Ben Mosquita. Comments and feedback should be sent to thebreakdown@thenation.com.
Cinnamon, where you gonna run to? Cinnamon, where you gonna run to? Where you gonna run to? All on that day.